RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a very interesting Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Dark to Light Frank. And...
That was great.
I knew I was going to go somewhere... I didn't know what the hell it was. I said, something's coming out of me right now. And it's not normal.
No, that was not. Like Will would say to me at this moment right now, you have a feather in your hiney. So we just finished a great interview with Patrick Byrne about his new book, which is out right now, which is called, Frank, The Deep Rig. This was a great interview we just did about this book. It is the 6 chapters that he published on the web, very much in detail, with 4 additional chapters and more information added about his experience through the contesting of the 2020 election. And there's a lot in there from his perspective about what happened. And a lot of it I can vouch for because I experienced it at the same time. I never really worked directly with Patrick. Like, we were on a couple calls together at the same time, but like, he was working with a different crew. But I can tell you that what he's saying is true. And it's hard to read, right, Frank? I mean, it's hard to read.
Well, like actually read it?
No. I mean, like, it hurts a bit to know.
Oh, yeah.
Just how.
Yeah. I don't know. You know what? We're so far removed from it at this point. It actually feels better to know that we weren't nuts, to know that once again, we weren't nuts. We've been right about everything along the way. We just did not get the result that justice would dictate should happen if you were living in a sane world. But it feels good to know, okay, yeah, we were seeing a gigantic pile of actionable evidence and a wonderful assortment of minds that were coming together, enthusiastic and really effective voices that were coming together and wanted to make something of this. And to see that it can just flake apart and sputter, and to say, well, what the hell was going on that we didn't see that this could be so poor? Because it wasn't just about circuit court judges and of course some really big upsetting decisions handed down from the Supreme Court. There had to have been something else. And to see what was going on behind the scenes, it just solidified so many of our suspicions just throughout the years of how many people, incompetent people and fakers have been surrounding the president for the entire time, that finally it just seems like they all found a window out. They found a window that had been cracked open enough that they can all squeeze out and just get the hell out of Dodge.
You know, the one thing we didn't ask Patrick about that I wanted to real quick before we start this interview. He says something in the book about at the very end when, you know, after the 6th happens, Rudy Giuliani calls him over and has him come and meet him for dinner and has him explain what they could still do to potentially save it. And he had been trying to get this strategy in front of that team, though. They didn't want to think about it. They didn't want to do anything about it. They just basically poo-pooed the whole thing. And then he tells Rudy and team about the audit that they want to do and the recounts in the 6 swing states and all that. And Rudy Giuliani says they all get excited about it. And they're like, oh, my gosh, this is great, blah, blah, blah. And then Rudy Giuliani goes up to him and says, ah, Patrick, if we only had another month.
I know.
And I'm just like, mother. And Patrick's like, dude, another month. We've been trying to get this in front of you for 3, almost 3, 2. That
just the way it is.
Without further ado, we are proud and happy to be joined by Patrick Byrne for, I think, now what will be your 4th appearance with us on the show. And you have, listen, I'm just going to start the interview off by saying this. I am in a unique position to have a different sort of a vantage point into your book that you've just released, which is it expands upon the articles that you put up at Deep Capture about the election saga. And I can tell you, when it came out, people were not willing to believe any of it. But I had to step up and say, he's telling the truth. Like, nobody understood what it was like. So I'm so glad to read it. Okay, where do we even begin?
You know, welcome to my world, Tracy. So first, Tracy and Frank, good to be, it's an honor to be on your show again.
Wonderful.
You know, do you see why I've kind of disappeared from the press for a month? Because I knew I had to sit, now that you know the whole story, would you agree my decision was, A, this is historic. I have a duty to write this as it happened, warts and all, and get it out to the world. And B, there's almost no point in doing an interview until I do, because you can't even tell this story. You can only write it. It's so, you get it?
Yes, of course. And, you know, we had brought you on before the election or before the nonsense all happened, when you had just met with President Trump in the Oval and you were talking about all he needs to do is sign this piece of paper. And, you know, we obviously had known that you had met with him and that it was a little bit, at least I knew it was a little bit contentious, to say the least. The story of you getting in there is something else. So let's start there. So you've been doing all this research. Now, I got this briefing from the Allied guys back in May, I think, of 2020. I was on the phone with them. They gave the whole briefing. We were trying to get them into the administration. Apparently, you were working with them at the same time.
August, I came along.
Okay. Okay, so yeah, so you're there in August. I knew this stuff. They gave the whole dossier, the whole thing, spelled it out. And they were tarred and feathered, but you had a big crew working with you, or not a big crew, but a very talented crew working with you.
We did really since August. I got asked to get involved in this issue, and I went down to Texas and met some people who had made it. They were not all from Texas, actually. They were all over. And they were a lot of retired feds and also not retired feds, but like cyber guys, as well as, you know, some other kinds of people. And they were on this since they had this figured out in August and September that something was going to happen. They believed that something was going to happen, and they were trying to warn the government.
Yeah, and the government didn't want to listen. You know, one of the things that I learned was that they had meetings set up that would be canceled at the last minute before they could get in there to share information or give briefings. I know for my part, I was told that somebody, I won't name a name, was going to cover the story before the election, and I was to just kind of wait, and they never did. So it was interesting. And then you meet with Sydney while she's in the office in that big warehouse with the election crew and find just a mishmash of nonsense going on, right? So
no, I met her in an office building in Virginia about 5 or 6 days after the election.
And she, this was when she was, quote, with the team, the president's team.
She was with Rudy's team. No one ever told me that. They were in the same office. I was asked to go in, or I asked to go in. By that time, it was about November 9th, let's say the Monday after the election. And myself and these cyber ninjas had worked hard for 5 or 6 days. We had it 50 or 60% cracked. And we got an appointment to go. I forget how it came about, but for us to go to this office space in Virginia and see Rudy and Sydney. So I assumed they were together. And I went over there with one of these cyber guys. And so
go ahead. Yeah. Mm.
She met first with Sydney, and she was sitting off by herself in kind of a strange way, maybe one assist staffer with her or something. But I briefed her for 45 minutes, myself and this other fellow, and she was perky, interested, bright, had lots of things to say, listened closely. She knew parts of the story. She had parts of the story we didn't know. We had already unraveled a bunch of data and found crazy stuff. We had found things like, okay, in Georgia, there was a moment where for 90 minutes, a set of precincts suddenly all start reporting 17 out of 18 votes for Biden, 1 out of 18 for Trump. And that goes on for 90 minutes, and then it flips to some other set of precincts. And for 90 minutes, they report exactly 17 out of 18 votes for Biden and 1 for Trump over and over and over continuously. So things like that don't happen. So we knew the game was rigged just from we had found numerous things like that. By 6 days after the election, we had teased out of the data. So we knew it was all rigged. Well, Sydney had a lot of information, and you only have to find one of those before you should get to that. At that point, you have zero confidence in the integrity. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Once you found something like that's going on, let alone all kinds of other things we're finding, we just knew it has zero integrity. The whole thing was an egg that I started saying by then, it's an egg that can't be unscrambled. We got to be looking for other paths. We can't unscramble this election. Well, anyway, so we go in to see Sydney. She was great. She had lots of information about the origin of some of these systems and why they were built that way. She already had, and there's affidavits, and there's affidavits that have been made public through her legal work from people in Venezuela on the origin of all this stuff 17 years ago, how it was designed and why it was designed this way. So, I mean, we have affidavits from people who were in the room with Hugo Chavez. Are you aware of that?
Of course I am. Yeah. Yes. I've read every single affidavit and I've read every single court case.
So she's, well, good for you. And you're a lawyer, right?
No, I'm not. I also provided some of that research,
Patrick.
She plays
one on TV.
I gave them some things, not the stuff about Venezuela, but I was contributing research as well, so...
Well, I know that you – oh, she loves you. I know that you were a big part of – the reason I ask if you're a lawyer is I know that you've been a big part of synthesizing this, and usually the people in that circle have been lawyers.
No, I just read a lot. But I just – look, that statement about Venezuela is causing now Dominion to sue Sidney Powell for $1.3 billion. How they're going to dispute that, I don't know. They're probably going to have to haul that guy in, but that's besides the point. The nonsense that went on was visible to people who were willing to see it, Patrick. I'll just tell you that. The disconnect, the dripping of the hair dye, all of the stuff that you talk about was visible to people who were willing to see it.
Really?
I think so.
So what do you want me to talk about? That she was really... I saw... what I would say probably an aspect of it was sexism, but there was real tension. I don't want to dwell on it too much, but it turns out she was sitting off by herself because I had walked in just after there was this big fight between her and Rudy. And they probably don't want me to talk about it too much publicly. I've said something about it in the paper.
Yeah.
I read that. Yeah.
Yeah. And look, I think the one thing that's hopeful in all of this, we can skip ahead a little bit, is the meeting at the White House relied upon some really good people to kind of facilitate the wave by, and they were in there working real hard.
Right. Youngsters, young staffers who were real believers. And, they're not old and beaten down and corrupt like people get after a couple decades in Washington, like the people they're working for. And they were... they helped Sydney and Mike and another lawyer, I'll call Allison in the book, all kind of slip in to the wire. We finally, on December 18th, we decided we had to we couldn't take this anymore, what we were seeing. We had to, and we couldn't reach the president. So we sort of ninja'd our way in, or let's say Jedi mind tricked our way in. It's funny.
With the help of
a couple of young staffers.
Yeah, I've come to know a few of them, and they're really passionate, amazing people. And it seems like, a lot of people are talking about, well, how does Mark Meadows just stand there and let all this happen? How does a Pat Cipollini stand there and let all this happen without even being able to answer the question, do you think this election was stolen? What was the vibe from these guys? Is it self-preservation, Patrick, or what?
The vibe was a bunch of naughty kids who were rationalizing. And they were usually on their game, but they got stopped by that question. And suddenly there were just a bunch of naughty kids with their toe in the dirt. Nobody wanted to look me or anyone in the eye. Everyone just looked down. They knew that we were right. they're, you know, at the end of the day, and good for Flynn to cut through. At the end of the day, if you agree that the election was rigged, and if you know that, then all these other things, the kinds of things they're bringing up, are footnotes to footnotes. Mm-hmm. If the American election was stolen, and they knew that, and we all knew that sitting in the room, we all knew the data and these different things that are in the book that you're talking about now. They, whose name may I mention to your viewers once? I don't want to turn this into a plug, but it's the name of the book is The Deep Rig, and it's available ebook only right now. On the internet, look up The Deep Rig and Patrick Byrne. Is it okay? I said that.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I was actually looking because I didn't. I don't care but I'm more interested in substance. I never remember the titles of things. I'm just like digging into the substance. But yeah, it's doing really well, Patrick. Where is it on Amazon this morning?
It's number 18 on all books on Amazon. It's only been up about 40 hours. It's number. Well, last night I checked, it was number one in three categories, like military history and all that, number 11 in new releases. And this is after only being on the site about 24 hours. I wouldn't be surprised if it becomes the best-selling book in America.
It deserves to be.
Listen, people were like, oh, he just wants them. I said, Patrick doesn't want your money.
Come on.
I said, trust me. He doesn't.
To be honest, I wanted it to be free. I was going to put it up as a PDF for free, but I was advised actually against that and stopped. And they are, and it's almost, and I see the point. This could become a global bestseller, is the counterargument. It could become a global bestseller, but to be that, it has to be an official book with an actual price on it. If it's just a pamphlet from some crazy guy, then the world isn't going to know how to interpret it. The world outside the United States, if it's a free pamphlet on the internet, then it's like the Unabomber's manifesto or something. If it's a book with a price and it becomes a bestseller and it's $4.99 even, that says something to the world different. Anyway, that was the argument that was made to me. And so I agreed and I put it up with the lowest price that one can put a book up. And you can be sure I've spent many, many millions of dollars in pursuit of the kinds of things we're talking about.
So Patrick, you admit that you're crazy then? Let me ask you, because you know the name of the book is called The Deep Rig. What did you think? Because you had to have seen this, the Time magazine article that really lays out a colossal amount of collusion between so many different areas of not only just the media, NGOs, think tanks, everything that people have been talking about.
Unions, AFL-CIO, as well as the Chamber of Commerce, U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Look, so there, Patrick, you go. But they don't call it a rig. They call it a fortification. What do you think when you spend so much time seemingly in vain, because your story is being heard, it's being read, and I think that is going to be the history that wins out with all this temporary corruption some people have been blinded by. What do you think about when you see the hubris in laying all that out, but just simply coming to a different conclusion that it was necessary and good for democracy?
I think that it is. I hope I'm not self-aggrandizing or aggrandizing my colleagues and but I think it's some of what's going on is a response to what do they call it in media, soft break. For example, there was an Axios article. I started writing I wrote these six chapters on my website, Deep Capture, that became the basis of the book, but it ended up being a 10-chapter book. And I cut things up and rearranged and added a bunch of material and evidence and things like that. So
you think they were basically trying to get in front of what you were saying, not knowing what was coming next?
Like, as I got in the middle of those articles, or once I got through the bulk of the articles, Axios came out. And somebody pointed out to me yesterday, Axios' article read like they read my articles and then they went to some lawyer who was in the room and said, tell us your side. And then they published it. That's all it was. And now that they know that this is not, see, they're in the phase, called normalization. Their goal is to normalize, and they normalize by the establishment will gaslight anybody who sees anything strange here. You know what gaslighting is? You want to explain to your viewers?
Yeah, it's when they try to convince you something is happening that's not happening, basically.
Yeah, and it's from an old black and white movie where the where a husband is slowly like poisoning his wife and doing bad things, but telling her as she keeps on seeing little things like the somebody turned the gas lights on when they should have been off, and it's like, and he's telling her, no, honey, that was you. Or like when you accuse somebody of cheating and they say, me cheating? No, you're the one that was it. And they're always like getting you to doubt yourself by and make you think you're the gook. That's called narcissists do it. It's a favorite technique number one of narcissism. That the media is now doing that to anybody who sees anything strange that here, but that doesn't change what the truth is. Listen, I lived with this for 3 years back, 05 to 08, when I took on Wall Street. I was telling everybody, look, there's this huge constellation of corrupt hedge funds centered on Stephen Cohen, and they're up to these shenanigans, A, B, and C, and the system's all going to melt down at some point. And for 3 years, I had to live with the press running pictures of me with UFOs coming out of my head because they wanted to tell the world that I was crazy.
At least, at least then they listened to you in some large part, Patrick. Now, we had a call. We talked about what was going on in Georgia. You released some photos and we were talking about that. And you said, oh, yeah, it's under control. And I'm like, are you sure? Because we've not had very much faith in all of this moving forward. Can you talk a little bit about what happened in Georgia with the investigation that was going on there? You talk about it in the book.
There are people I have to protect in Georgia, but my understanding from the people on the ground who have been very, very reliable and are serious people with law enforcement and quasi-law enforcement backgrounds say that when the Fulton County, Georgia, which is to say Atlanta, county, whatever, decided to audit the election board and audit all these machines and all this paper. They wanted a full audit. There's a warehouse in Atlanta over, it's called English Street, and they call it the English Street Warehouse, if I have it correctly. And that's where the county kept all this stuff, and they demanded an entire audit. Well, we sent in this network of people with whom I was working and found a Antifa-like young woman who took some money and she infiltrated the warehouse because she looked the part. And she took a bunch of pictures of different stacks of ballots and took samples from different stacks. They all should be identical. And we got a number. We took three of them and got out with them. So, then I believe that was the day before the I don't know who it was, the state Senate or the – yeah, it was the state Senate. The state Senate voted to audit the whole English street warehouse. 6 hours later, they brought in Enterprise vans, and there are videos of these vans that come in and empty out stacks of ballots. They got taken to – I don't know where they spent overnight. The next day in the next county, a shredding company with a mobile truck that comes around and shreds gets a call that comes to a place and picks up 3,000 pounds of ballots. Now, they already had 7,000 pounds in their load that they had shredded, but they had 3,000 pounds of ballots. The guy who paid for it, I'm told, paid with a Dominion voting system's credit card. I'm just repeating what's in the book now. I've been keeping these details to myself. They went off and shredded it through mechanisms I'm not going to explain. That truck got halted before it was complete. Well, it was completed shred, but it got halted and forced to dump its contents at a police station. So there would be a good legal chain of custody. There was 10,000 pounds of shredded material, of which about 3,000 was ballots. However, stuck to the side of the bins, because it was the last run, were a couple ballots that had not been shredded, as well as a couple pieces of paper from a Chinese printing shop. the DHS showed up. The DHS agent who took command of the situation is himself evidently something of a knows a lot about China and the U.S. kind of matters. I don't know the details. And he took control, and that information was all relayed to me. And there were 3,000 pounds of ballots, and there were these pieces of paper and evidently a couple unshredded ballots. That information got to me, and through other channels connected to me, it got to Rudy. And with it, some hours later, let's say, I forget the number, but let's say 12 hours later. And some hours after that, it got to Mark Meadows. And shortly thereafter, another government agency, whom I do not like to slag because I like them. They used to be heroes of mine. But anyway, you know, the other government agency showed up on the scene. But you, Tracy, you can say their name because you've read the book, I suppose.
It's the FBI. So,
yeah. They showed up on the scene to take command. And I got a message. And the message was, my understanding is they showed up on the scene to take control. The DHS resisted. This agent resisted. He got a phone. Now, the way I've heard the story tell, I have not, you know, this is how the story came to me. He got a phone call from Mark Meadows telling him to back off the investigation. I got a message allegedly from the agent telling me to pass to the very top, as if I could, that he was getting, he felt very uncomfortable because of political pressure he was getting on the investigation. All that said, I couldn't get a message anywhere. I can't, it's not like Trump and I, I snuck into his office once.
Yeah, you don't have like a line to him. You had to finagle your way in there in the first place.
Yeah. And then some hours later, the FBI did in fact take command of the investigation. Now, this is the story as told to me by somebody very close to the scene on the ground. The FBI did take command of the incident or whatever it's called and had the shredding company come back, load up the 10,000 pounds back in their truck and continue with their operation, which was to finish the shred, go back to their place, finish the shred. And then that shred, and by the way, I'll get back to that. That shred then gets mixed in with water and acid and melted and mixed with chemicals and reconstituted as recycled paper. So much for any evidentiary value. So that's what happened. I'm told that's step by step. That's what happened on the ground. And just so you know, whoever it was, whether it was in fact or not a Dominion voting person, as I've been told, who paid for this and by a very reliable person who paid for this with a Dominion credit card, that not only that, there are three levels of shredding. There's shredding where you just strip into like long strips. Then the more costly one is you turn things into actually like confetti. But for the military grade and shredding, I forget what it's called, but that's when they strip it down to little tiny pieces and those pieces get crushed into little spitballs. That's the kind of shredding that they did with these ballots.
And so whatever, there's a couple different things. I mean, can you FOIA for that investigation? Can you subpoena during this defamation suit for the financial records of Dominion to see if it was in fact a Dominion credit card that paid for the shredding? And what happens now? I mean, what about all those people that knew that? It's mind-boggling to me. We have no justice system whatsoever anymore.
Oh yeah, no, and especially once you see the Supreme Court
today
rulings today, moot. At first, it was no standing. Now it's moot. So
I don't know. Did they dismiss Sydney's because it's moot?
No, it was Pennsylvania.
But here's the thing, Patrick. I mean, people like Sidney Powell. She has to fight for herself now, you know. So I can see how a lot of people are just so dismayed with what kind of blocks have been thrown up in front of us and the inside baseball on what was going on with the Trump campaign and his defense team and the the mediocrity that was running throughout all of it. But on the other hand, there are some really good, high quality people now that are fighting major lawsuits from these companies like Dominion and stuff, who not only, I mean, there's more than, I think the reason for fighting is even better at this point, especially for people like Sidney Powell to go and keep it up. It's for self-preservation. So, I mean, you have not had any of the problems that she's had in the long run outside of the media smears. What do you think should be done as far as the fight going forward? Or do you think that it's largely moot?
No, it's not moot at all. First of all, and I get there at the end of my book. Tracy, would you like to make the argument I make at the end of the book? Because I know it's the same way you see the world.
Well, it's a number of different facets. And, you know, you go through explaining, which I think is brilliant because we've said it too, that how COVID wraps into this and the PSYOP that they've been perpetrating on us. And if we don't have this, if we don't have election integrity, this should be the foremost thing that we focus on. And I agree with you in that there's nothing after that. So we can go back to politics as usual. But if in 2022 they pull this again, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. No matter what you care about, if you care about anything in politics, you now care about election integrity first and more. Because whether you care about abortion or gun rights or this or that or Israel, whatever your issue is in politics, or your local school bond, whatever your issue is in politics, at the end of the day, what you have to care about election integrity. You don't get any voice unless there's election integrity. So you have to care about election integrity first. And we have one chance to fix this. I think this is a slow coup from China. I think this is Chinese PSYOP we're living through. And we're going to become a vassal state of China unless we wake up and fix everything in the next election, which we can do if we have election integrity. So every Republican and libertarian, I'm a small L libertarian, a small R Republican, as Milton Friedman used to define himself. We have to you got to get involved in your local election matters, especially if you're in a swing state. You got to get involved in the system. You have to take the 2 days of training. You know, what happened is the goons and the union guys, they had the time to go and take the 2 days of training. Your listeners probably have jobs and they don't normally have the time to take that 2 day training course, which lets you really work in the precincts. And you got to get involved and you got to figure out how to stop the shenanigans before the next election. We can pull this off if we can fix things the next election cycle. We can at least stymie Joe Biden. Joe Biden is going to get wrapped up in his underwear with a little bit of luck. And if the Republicans in the Senate stand tall, now AOC is threatening to end the filibuster, but we can wrap him up enough that we'll win in a landslide in the next election, unless they rig the game, and which they want to do by making federal laws saying, arguing for the most loosey-goosey election, you know, sloppiness you can imagine. And they want to change the electorate. They want to change the laws and they want to change the electorate. If we can hold them up for a couple years and then and have election integrity in 2022, we can stop all this. It can't get too bad. We'll have a landslide and we can fix things. But it all comes down to election integrity in the next cycle, which is 20 months away.
And, you know, not for nothing, there are a lot of great things going on around the country in this regard, especially in Arizona, where Mark Fincham is a huge part of this. He's fighting right now for criminal penalties against the Maricopa County Board of Elections. You point this out in the book a couple times. Like, if this was all straight and narrow, why the absolute, you know, pushback on looking at this stuff? And the solution that you had wanted and everybody on the team thought was best was to go in there and go into these counties and recount these paper ballots for, you know, in full view of the entire country and match them to the vote totals, because that was how they sold us these machines in the first place. There's a paper ballot backup and people were worried about optics and all kinds of other nonsense, which at that point in time, who gives a crap about optics? It's the country hanging in the balance. But what festers, Patrick? There are other things going on, like with DiPerno and Antrim County and a whole bunch of other stuff. Do you know any positives that are going on?
Yeah, They're really serious things. They're really serious things. And he does have standing and it's not moot. And those are serious. That one in particular is quite serious. You know, what it's going to take is one breakthrough that lets us really get to a forensic audit on everything. And when we can do that, and or when that can be done in one place, then that's going to, I think that's going to show so much mischief that all over the country, people are going to say, you know what, we have to do that here. We got to do that here in Georgia. We got to do it here in Maricopa County. And it will give credit, but we have to get that breakthrough. That's why they are fighting in every place in America, and they are so overlord. And you know how it is funny how these guys sold these machines on the grounds that it's total transparency and there's a paper ballot backup if you ever need it as a failsafe. Well, now for the first time in history, we as a nation need that. We need to look at the we need the transparency. We need to, and that the same people are fighting for every inch not to open up, not to let us have one peep, and they have been since November 4th. So the same people who've been saying, "Oh, this is all failsafe and paper ballot backup and transparency and all this stuff," have been fighting any glimmer of transparency since November 4th, which kind of tells me something too.
There's another part in here that was added, and I think I don't want to. There's other stuff in this book, that additional chapters, and everything's so well sourced and well done, and you can really see the background behind everything. But something I didn't even know about Pence, which I was pretty stunned that he even got as far as you're saying. You're saying in your book that you knew that the day of the 6th, Pence was planning on going up there and asking for however long many days, I forget what you said, 7-day delay to investigate some of these issues, because some of these representatives in the state stood up and had a sack and said, okay, we want Pence, please wait on this because we want to look at what's going on here since all this evidence has been brought to our attention.
Right. And it wasn't on the 6th, it was on the 5th. He was there on the 5th. From 3:30 to 6:30, he was there. And he, as a result of a briefing we gave to some people, one of whom was a delegate of his, that person went back and gave that briefing and brought materials, I believe, and gave that briefing. And Pence on the 5th from 3:30 to 6:30 was there, that what he should do is go in. You know, the only constitutionally mandated date is January 20. January 6th is a date that does show up in a law from a law. But you're really talking about what affords least insult to the Constitution. You know, if we let that January 6th date slide by a week, or you give all the states 1 week to investigate what's going on in their state and then recommit their votes any way they want. Which of those is less of an insult in your mind, Tracy, to the Constitution?
Obviously, the 6 or 7 days they would need to go back. Yeah.
He was there on the afternoon of the 5th from 3:30 to 6:30 based on a briefing he received. He was there that was the right thing to do.
And then he turned into a little weasel and decided not to do it. Now,
his chief of staff.
You remember his chief of staff before, in the beginning of the Trump administration, was actually married to a spy that the FBI was using to get information out of the White House. Okay.
No, I did not know that. What's the guy's name?
God, what was his name? Frank.
It's in the book.
Who again?
It's not that guy. The guy that was working for him, his chief of staff now is a different one, but I forget their names in the beginning. In the beginning of the Trump administration, Pence's chief of staff was married to an FBI agent.
Mark Short.
Yeah, not Mark Short.
Swamp guy, legislative assistant type guy his whole life.
All I'm saying is that Pence doesn't have a very good handle on, either he doesn't care or he doesn't have a good handle on who's working around him, because he has had issues with stuff like that in the past. And, you know, you mentioned in there that there was some sort of and this is in the website version too, that there was some sort of a threat against, or a perceived threat against, President Trump and his family based around all this. And I've been very careful this whole time, Patrick, because I've said, as much as I'm disappointed that no action was taken by the president to do the things that needed to be done. We have no idea what kind of stuff he was hearing that could have scared the living bejesus out of him, right?
Yeah, and as I indicate in the book, I did hear that there was a threat passed. Now, who knows if this is true, but I heard from an insider that one of the things going on, I heard this in December or January, I forget, it's in the book, the specifics, but that it's that she had received it, that there had been a threat that basically said, we can't even protect you in a second administration, that we think you're going to be JFK'd, and that his wife had that information. So there was pressure from within the family, just get out, we got to get out of town, we're all going to get killed.
Look, that's a very real thing. And I, you know, it's easy to stand on the outside and say, well, he should have done this and he should have done that. And, you know, this is a man who basically has now been completely, he's got the power of the people behind him because the message is so great. And he, you know, he's a champion for the message. But he had his whole entire life in front of him. He could have been very happy. Like you mentioned, he says in the meeting a couple times. And now he's being attacked still continuously, legally and in every other way. Let's circle around real quick to the sixth, which I know that you are a non, you know, for the non-aggression principle, non-violence. I am too. I think the sixth has been a mishmash of nonsense, but I can't help but consider the possibility that there was something more going on there that allowed these challenges to stop happening. We had just started the challenge for Arizona and this stuff started going down. You guys kind of left in disgust, but what are your thoughts about what happened on the 6th? And it, as it regards to a purposeful, you know, disruption.
Well, so I did meet some militia guy, came up to me on the morning of the 6th, I think it was, and told me, maybe it was the 5th, and told me that there were a bunch of his type there and we got long guns and we're ready to take the city and stuff. And I told the guy, Jesus, you want to, and he said, we're ready to do whatever you tell us. And I said, if you want to do whatever I tell you, is you stay nonviolent. The only way we lose this is if you get violent. You're out of your mind. Do not go violent. And I said in a number of the public appearances and probably on your radio show, a lot of radio shows, when I talked about that day as it came up, I was saying, we stay nonviolent. We're not like the goons. And but there were people on our side. I mean, let's not forget, there were people on our side spoiling for a fight. Now, I agree. I'm horrified by the violence we've been seeing for 9 months, which has hurt 700 cops and killed 33 cops. But anyway, there's really strong evidence. So we had people on our side spoiling for a fight, and I wish that weren't true. And I wish I had gotten a chance to speak the morning of the 6th. I was supposed to speak, and I had this wonderful story I was going to tell about Moldova, which is this, and it's very germane to what you're, it's a short way to explain the point you're asking me to explain. I was in Moldova a few years ago, and I was talking to a barman one time, and he was talking about the election of, I think it was 09, where there was a fake, the election got rigged, and a man who was unpopular and very pro-Putin, President Putin of Russia, got elected, and everybody knew the game had been fixed, and there started to be protests. And Putin sent dozens of guys into Moldova as agent provocateur, is the French expression. It's an old expression. For some reason in America, we're not familiar with this concept, but everyone else in the world I've ever been knows this concept. That these guys, single guys, kind of coming in on bus, you know, or on a rail ticket or something, just living in the park and just looking like homeless guys. Anytime there was a demonstration, these guys would go and get involved, and they would try to get the demonstration as they were demonstrating in front of some government building. They would try to get the people to break the windows, to charge up, to break the windows, to let's invade, to let's occupy these government buildings. And the reason that Putin sent people to try to do that was the Moldovan protesters knew that they're really playing for an audience. That audience is the great middle class, or the great middle of Moldova. And they knew they had those people on their side. But if they had done that, if they had gone and charged government buildings and broken windows and gotten violent, they lose the people on their side. And so they had the discipline to not do that. And that is what we need is not only we have to understand we have the American people on our side. And so, but when we go to this protest, this is what I plan on saying on the 6th, as we go to this rally, just remember, if anyone starts trying to lead us into violence, we have to be as smart as the Moldovans were and stop them and understand that's the only thing we can do that loses. But that's what they want us to do. So this is what, you know, Flynn had this whole speech prepared. He was going to speak. I was going to speak. And then we thought we were going to have a couple scientists speak. So it all got canceled so that, you know, we could sing happy birthday to one of the Trump children.
You know, you said a bunch.
I got to jump in on that because it's true. Tracy and I have talked about this a lot. I've talked about it on my own show quite a bit, Patrick. I was really excited about January 6th for a while. And I was, you know, I was even a last minute decision whether or not I was actually going to go myself. And the reason why is because, OK, this was something that was actually promoted by the president for weeks as something that was going to be a raucous, wild, celebratory event that should not be missed, which made me and many other people think that there was going to be some undeniable revelation, some actionable something that was going to be presented that should not be missed at all, that was going to turn the tide. And not only did we realize right off the bat with the mediocre speeches that there was nothing new that we were learning about here, it immediately turned into this embarrassment of a day, which has now been turned into the Bay of Pigs if you put on CNN every night. And I'm starting to wonder I started wondering right off the bat in hindsight, was the president set up for this? Because, well, you know, he was promoting it.
Well, no, I was promoting it too. It could have been a great day. It should have been a great day. It's horrible what happened. We got fooled, unlike the Moldovans. Our side went along with, and it looks like 400 people of our side out of millions there, you know, were stupid enough to go into Congress and do stupid stuff. Now, that said, as I make clear in my book, that's the party line explanation, and I'm, you know, that's part of the truth, and we have to acknowledge that's part of the truth. There were several hundred from our side who were dumb enough to get sucked into doing this terrible, unpatriotic thing. And we're not going to make those kind of mistakes again. However, there's clear evidence, which I walk through in the book, that there were agents provocateurs involved. And not only the guy John Sullivan, who just happens to be living, you know, very close to me in Utah, but others. And I have videos. I mean, I have all these. What's nice about me, my stuff, I think, is although I get criticized when I talk to mainstream journalists, they're like, you know, they're snooty because I'm linking to YouTube. Well, wait a second. What's better, to look at an actual video of YouTube of something happening, in this case, some Antifa guys in the bushes outside the Capitol changing into MAGA gear? I mean, some passerby caught that on camera and it's plain as day. That's what's going on. Or do you want to read some Atlantic Monthly article about, oh, you know, this stuff never happened? So I have all the videos up there. As you read the book, you click, and when you read them on your Kindle or whatever, you click and all these videos come up that show you exactly what I'm talking about. There was clearly some kind of agent provocateur involvement in this, and this was rigged. The cops, you know, I say, how do we know that the cops invited people in? Well, here's a video of the cops
inviting people in. Right.
Yeah. I mean, guys, they're waving them past the barricades.
You know, you said, Patrick, that we're, you know, you don't understand why we aren't familiar, the Americans aren't that familiar with that process there, the agent provocateurs. And I think it's mostly because we here in America, we've been conditioned to want to believe that our political enemies are indeed that irredeemable as human beings. And it's just easier to embrace that than to consider that average people are always being played against each other.
Yeah. Well, they are. And the other side is very sophisticated. The other side, this has been pulled off with like a military execution. The other side sophisticated, and shame on us. We have to learn our lesson from that. There's never, if there are demonstrations again, if the day comes when there are demonstrations again, let's be careful. to learn our lesson from that. I met this militia guy, like I say, beforehand, and he told me that's what they had planned. And I thought, I was so stunned. I thought the guy was out of his mind. How did he think that was going to play out to America? We had America on our side until they did that.
You know,
and
I forgot what I was going to say. Damn it. Damn it. Damn it. Why does that keep happening to me?
Well, they're going to do it again. If we ever have any more demonstrations, they're going to try to do it again. But this next time, when we have people trying to get our side to break into a government building, our people are going to grab them and stuff them down a toilet, I hope. It's the worst thing that our side can do.
I remember now. So you talked a lot about the GOPE, the GOP elite, so to speak, that are no different than any. And we talked about this before. They're no different than the Republicans or the Democrats or the progressives or the communists or oligarchs. They're the same coin. They care about their fancy parties and their gigs and their lobbyist jobs and their think tanks and all that nonsense. And one thing that never happens on the quote conservative side is the hand holding across organization to work together, pool funding, get money together to fuel the engine, like the fortification that happened with these progressives. We did a big piece at Uncover DC about Catalyst and how they use that data engine to run their whole fortification effort. What do we need to do? Like, do you think that the people need to stop calling everybody who does something like you selling a book a grifter? Is that the first step towards trying to be able to work together and get some funding? Or like, what's the deal?
Well, what's funny? I've really been quite surprised. I thought it was going to be a big treat for all my followers that I came out with this book. It's quite a bit. It's rearranged from the 6 chapters I put on my website. They've been cut up, pasted, rearranged, and then tremendously expanded to. And now we have a book that we can give the world. And, you know, the fact that this has become number 18 on Amazon by this morning is phenomenal. It'll be top 10. Maybe it's become the best. And by the way, you know, I'm not, it's going to go, maybe it goes international. Who knows where it's going? Maybe it's going to be a movie. I would have thought they would have been thrilled. This is going to be a really important weapon in our arsenal. And instead, I had people, God, it seemed like the first like 7 out of 10 comments were, oh, grifter, you're just trying to charge us $4.99 for a book.
I think this is important because you put out a book for $4.99 and there is a multi-billion-dollar oligarchy trying to attack the little guy over and over and over and over again and smash them out of existence. And the people who are consuming the like your story, for example, are yelling at you for charging $4.99 to make sure it's official so that it can be a widespread thing. That needs to stop. We need to change that mindset. It was perpetrated by agent provocateurs from the left who got in and started seeding this into people's mindset. And it needs to stop. It needs to change.
Well, I got to tell you, I can tell. Well, thank you very much. Thank you. I mean, I've been on this hunt for about 16 years now, and I've put in $40 million. And I'm not really a billionaire. I have $100 million bucks, but $40 million, I mean, I'll survive. And I hate to be crass, but since this has become the topic, those are the numbers. I don't have the kind of numbers that can change this, that can save the country. You know, it is good. There is real good money has been coming in to Sydney to defend the Republic. I can tell you, I was so disgusted with the Republicanism that I saw. These were fat cats, grifters, non-believers, just not the kind of people were, not the people, not the right. People of America, not the people. They're not our style. I told people in that book, do not give another penny to the Republican Party. Give it to defendingtherepublic.org, which was set up by Mike Flynn and Sidney Powell. And it's basically, it's an organization. Think of it as the anti-Soros. It's think of it as, you know, we're going to find it's going to defeat the effects of this. We're finding the right candidates. We're fighting the election lawsuits that need to be fought. This is defending the Republic. And the two most honest people I met who are totally purely get it are Mike Flynn and Sidney Powell. that, and you can, I can promise you this money is going to be well spent and fighting exactly the fights we need to fight.
I agree, because I have come to know General Flynn very well, and I knew him before because of all the work that I did covering his story. And he's an amazing, amazing patriot, like, and the best person. The whole family are amazing. They really are. And
salt of the earth.
So just so you know, Patrick, back in 2010, the Ron Paul revolution infiltrated the GOP and took over several key positions inside of the GOP infrastructure. And we used that to run a delegate strategy that would allow Ron Paul to produce a contested convention at the GOP. And there was one small problem. There weren't enough of us. Well, that strategy is now being implemented with 85 million Americans who are raring to go and get into their local party structure and apparatus and get rid of those fat cats and people you talked about just now. So
it's time. God, I was disgusted. Yeah. I was disgusted.
Yeah.
This is, now is the time. It is not the time to go start a third party. There never will be a successful third party. There's a whole Polly's Eye proof of that, that it, you can't, the way the other two parties jockey around, that third party never gets any traction. You got to take over the Republican Party from within and return it to its, you know, what it stood for, what it is about. It was loathsome. But you're right. You got 80 million Americans ready to do that work.
Yeah, and it's happening. Frank, you have any other questions or details you were interested about?
No. It was. I think from the outside, we were seeing so much of what Patrick was watching on the inside, and wondering what the hell was the disconnect? What was the reason that everything that is so over the top? I think Patrick used the phrase or at least the sentiment that it's not necessarily that you have to be able to prove off the bat. Mass election fraud would be beyond a shadow of the doubt, but it's an insult to intelligence,
right?
To say that there is nothing here worthy of examining, and the fact that that very basic, what you would think would be an inquiry that would be, I don't know, warmly accepted by any group of people, any nation that holds love of country as a common bond, that they would want to explore that in any way, shape, or form to make sure that there's never any kind of question going forward as to whether or not we're living a legitimate reality.
They're going to make it against the law to question it.
That's exactly. Exactly. It's the exact opposite. I think that's just the thing I took away from all this, because we are all, the tens of thousands of affidavits and the hundreds of hours of the televised testimonials. And I think anybody that was paying attention knows, oh my God, I mean, is there anybody that's going to take this seriously? Because it seems pretty clear to us, the Antrim, Michigan, you put it all together. So to see the connections not be made and the engine not being ignited, it really is just very, very sobering to be able to see what's going on behind the scenes, what Patrick was able to see with his own two eyes.
Well, you know, thank you very much, Frank. I wrote 15 years ago, I went through this once with Wall Street because I knew 08 was coming in 05. And I started bringing all this data and all these experts and stuff to the powers that be. And I saw their inertness. And that's when I started realizing the fix is in. Well, what half of America is going through now is what I went through 15 years ago. And I know it's quite disorienting. It must seem really strange because you believe to some degree in your government before then. But now, given the depths of this, you're understanding how deep the capture goes. Am I correct?
Yeah. Nice.
Indeed.
Nice phrase. Yeah. You picked perfect words, Patrick. So the book is called The Deep Rig. It's available for $4.99. The link to it will be in the show notes below. And I've clout hubbed it. I've gabbed it. I have parlored it. And I've recommended that everybody pick it up and read it, because it's hard to read that there was such incompetence behind the scenes and things were just not running the way they should have been running, but it needs to be read.
Thank you. It's not a long read, is it? How long did it take you to read?
No, it took me about an hour and a half.
Oh, wow. You're a fast reader.
I'm a very fast reader. Yeah. But yeah, it's a great book.
It's like a 4-hour read. It's 40,000 words.
It's enthralling.
It's a 120-page book, I think, is what the equivalent.
Yeah, it's enthralling. If I had, if it took me 4.5 hours to read that many pages, I would never get a story done. Never. So I'm a speed reader now. So.
Okay.
Patrick, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Get it. So good for you. Take over the Republican Party and get involved in an election. You got one chance, maybe. I mean, I think we got sort of a 60-40 chance in our favor. If we take the 2022 election, there's a limit to how much bad Biden can do. But we have to get the election integrity fixed. And we may get lucky with the Supreme Court. I'm sorry to hear that they're taking the road that these things are moot. There are some that I hope they're not going to take that. With in Sidney's case, there was clear circuit court error. But yet her case has become, she doesn't have standing. She's lost her. So I'm afraid they're going to go with a standing argument with her.
It's a three. Her cases are, her cases have become polarizing because of the legacy media rather than looking at them for what they actually are. And so she's got that hurdle to cross with the Supreme Court, although that shouldn't make a damn difference.
You know, she had, here's her situation in Michigan. She has such a well-documented case with the affidavits, with the statistical affidavit, all everything that you would want, but the affidavits of people who were there on the ground in the voting, you know, the precincts, working all that stuff, whistleblowers, everything. And yet the court that looked at it in Michigan didn't give her an evidentiary hearing or something, didn't take the step they should have taken. It was a clear error. And the Supreme Court should take the position that, Jesus, if that doesn't reach the level of where a court's going to act, then nothing does. And they have to address that. On the other hand, Sidney's plaintiff from Michigan, I forget what, she arguably the case is her electors. Arguably, since we're past January 6th, 7th, none of that matters anymore, so the whole case is moot. So the Supreme Court can take that position, or that she doesn't have standing because she's a – but they have to – they can't – if they let stand that Michigan court let her case – they got it before January 6th. They got it – late December, or late November, early December, they got it and could absolutely have had an evidentiary hearing and made and acted. And the fact, and it, her evidence clearly reached the point. If it doesn't reach that point, nothing ever will, which means the goons can now cheat at will.
Yep.
And there's no, yep. And we're going to be defeated because, you know, the wheels of justice grind slow and there's only so much you can do in 6 weeks. Before Christmas, and then it's Christmas, and the courts are out, and they don't come back until after January 6th. So you really have, you know, we have a situation where the goons cheated like hell, and we had 6 weeks, basically, to prove it. And if we hadn't gotten it done in 6 weeks, the wheels of justice grind, and it's the cases are all ground up, and you'll get lost in a bunch of standing and case moot decisions.
It's a quandary. And, you know, Gorsuch actually stood up and had some guts from what I'm reading. But you're right. It is a technical issue in Sidney's one. And the PA one was not. Although it's a constitutional issue and so freaking important. So I'm blown away that we needed one more justice, Amy Coney Barrett, that, like, these people we fought so hard for. We knew this, though. That's the thing. We keep getting walked all over, and we never do anything about it.
Do you think they're not – I mean, she and Clarence Thomas and Alito have to be standing up, don't you think?
No, it was Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas were the three that argued that the case should be heard.
And Alito and Thomas are pretty much the only two members of the court that can be trusted right now. Well, yeah. Gorsuch has actually been remarkable, but he sat on his hands – In the last portion of December. I was surprised about that. I was always wondering whether or not Kavanaugh was always the loosest out of all of them outside of Roberts, who, you know, is just a plant. So I couldn't believe if Trump's picks alone just stood up to the plate with Alito and Thomas. Then I mean, once Texas got stabbed in the heart, I knew that we were in trouble.
Well, there are other attorney generals in other states, and although that, I think that attorney general Paxton had some real courage. There are other attorney generals in other states and other directions. You know, just remember the cases that you're seeing now are things that were just sort of, you know, pulled together in the most, in the dimmest understanding compared to what we have now of everything that was done. There's other ways to skin this cat, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, federalism has made a big roaring return, and we've got 24 states, I believe. Let's just make sure. We just need people with guts. We need more people like in Arizona. We need more people like even the Pennsylvania legislature, to be honest, in the, you know, they tried, but we just need people to stop caring so much about what they say. They're the minority, a clear minority. I don't understand this. I really don't. There's nobody with guts. It's disheartening.
Yeah. Well, our side has to react. Our side has to react, but we cannot react with violence. I hope everybody learned the lesson. We had America behind us until those 400 fools let themselves be tricked into charging the Capitol. And who cares if Antifa goons were there luring them in? We should. Our side should have been smarter than that.
No, I agree. It was definitely changed everything that day. Well, Patrick, thank you. We
Tracy, great talking to you. You too, Frank.
Hey, Patrick, I love talking to you, man. I really do.
Thanks for
what's that?
You know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I didn't hear what you had said there.
Well, I was going to say, I love talking to you guys, and I want to thank you. I put out, you know, we talked about this book, The Deep Rig. I feel like it's actually, remember what I said, it's a tool in our arsenal. It's already, it's going to be the best, top 10 bestseller by the end of the day at the rate it's moving. And then who knows what, that becomes, you know, it was really General Flynn saw the wisdom in me getting pen to paper and doing that and getting that written. It's something that can really make a difference, I hope. And people, and I don't, you know, it's not a pay in to Donald Trump. Would you agree that I've put in stuff?
No, it's not. It's a very legitimate, well-sourced, investigative-esque memoir of what actually happened from your vantage point in the 2020 election. And you happen to have a vantage point that was on the inside of the fight, the people that were trying to do the right thing to stop it. And the truth doesn't always feel comfortable, Patrick, for people, right? If you're looking for pro-Trump, rah-rah-rah, he did everything right memoir, this is not it. But you don't trash the guy either. You don't.
No. I think that's what gives the work that much more credence to be able to be so openly. I don't take anything that you said as dishonest. It's too real to be dishonest about your family history and your relationship with American politics and how you view politicians and the this is not somebody that you would characterize as a sycophant.
And not only that, for anyone who was interested, because there was a lot of people that just don't like your relationship with Warren Buffett. If you want to know how that relationship started, it is in the book. So buy it and you might change your mind.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Cool.
Warren's a wonderful man. He's been my uncle my whole life. So that's so, you know, we don't agree on everything, but he's a very close friend and teacher to me.
Cool.
So anyway, thank you for having me on again, folks. I look forward to I'll promote your show as soon as I see it on up.
I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And there it was, Frank.
And there it went.
There it went. So, I mean, you could pull from that what you'd like, guys. It is what it is. I'm, you know, the thing that sucks for me is I'm scared to talk sometimes because I know there's a good portion of people out there who just want to attack us when we say things that they don't want to hear or that they might not agree with or whatever. And it's happened to us before. And this is one person's story that, I mean, you could take it or believe it. You could believe it or not believe it. It's really up to you guys. He provides information in his book. It's all sourced and backed up. He provides affidavits and technical research and videos and all kinds of stuff that you can read and look at. But this is just his perspective from what he did. And I just happen to know that he was, in fact, doing the things that he says he was doing. So there's that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't hold it first of all, I don't get too many. I know you see a lot more feedback than I do, but I don't hold it against anybody. We're in topsy turvy times.
Yeah.
It's a little and the other thing there too is a lot of the initial pushback and a lot of the initial sour grapes that we were dealing with in the, I don't know, the weeks heading into the new year, when we were already starting to count our chickens and saying, okay, well, how many doors are still open and how many plays are there on the chessboard? It once all that comes and goes, and you can tell it's not pessimism. It's just you have to realistically assess the situation we're in so that we can try to find a new way to navigate the rocks.
Yeah.
You know, we're in rocky waters here, and to just commit to we've won, we've already won, and go, you know, barreling forward no matter what the hell's ahead, it's not the best for longevity, and it's also not the best for mental health, because I mean, then you set yourself up for bigger losses that might be harder to get past. I think it's of great value to consider things that might be uncomfortable at times, especially since we're putting ourselves a little bit more distance between the trauma, and we're farther away from the trauma than we were, obviously. And I think it's a good time for a lot of people to reassess their positions and their hard lines and see if they could be moved a little bit differently.
A lot of people got mad at us for saying that we were in the acceptance phase so early. And I just want to say that the reason why I was personally in the acceptance phase is because I had gone through the other stages before the sixth, because this was really hard. It was a really hard few months, and I still go backwards a lot because it was hard, and it still is hard. But we need to move forward, implement the strategies that are going to make us successful, and I think that we're doing that. So we will continue to work hard, save this republic, and do what we've got to do. But we need to know what happened, and this is one man's perspective on that. So I hope you guys enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
You have been listening to to the Dark to Light podcast with
Dark to Light Frank and
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. Wednesday morning, I will be recording with you as I drive to Orlando.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah. So we'll talk to you
then.
You
going to Disney World?
I'm going to CPAC.
Universal Studios, I mean. You're gonna go to Islands of Adventure and ride the Hulk.
I'm going to work and listen to President Trump speak on Sunday.
Oh, well, that sounds fun too.
Yeah. So we'll see you then.
All right. Bye bye.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with radio personalities like Ian Beckles, news and political pundits like independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.